The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Alcantara, Soroka, you look so good in Boca. Peralta, Manoa, bounce back for Aaron Nola. Giolito, Castillo, Yoshida, Osusuko.
Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on May 10th. I am Frank Stanfield, joined by Scott White. Today on the show, we have hitters that are going in opposite directions, another prospect spotlight. I have a new segment called Trade Matchmaker. Not sure if it's going to work, but we'll try it out. Plus, we'll preview Week 8. We've got two-star pitchers, sleeper hitters, and much more. Let's jump in.
Oh my goodness gracious!
All right, Scott. With the many options to choose from, who is your player of the night?
Yeah, save it. 7-game slate today. So not many choices, but I'm going to go with Max Kepler here, who went 2-for-4 with a home run. And Max Kepler, it turns out, has been doing a lot of good lately at the plate. Last 6 games, he's now 11-for-22. Quick math, that's a .500 batting average over that 6-game stretch. 2 home runs, 6 doubles, only 3 strikeouts. His 14.6% strikeout rate is the best he's ever had. He's never been a high strikeout guy, but this is the best he's ever had. And he has hit a ball this year 115.4 miles per hour, which is his highest max exit velocity since 2016. So the version of Max Kepler we're seeing here by the under the hood data is maybe the best we've ever seen. And he's always been kind of a darling pick among certain fantasy analysts because he doesn't strike out much. He hits the ball pretty hard. He elevates pretty well. And it hasn't translated. He's had a couple good years, but for the most part, he's always been kind of underwhelming. And maybe he will be again. But just given how thin outfield is, it's like the thinnest position by a long shot. And the fact that that low strikeout rate makes him well suited for points leagues, especially, which are the shallower outfield leagues. I think Kepler deserves more attention than he's gotten so far. His roster rate is just a little, it's right at 50%. So he's widely available at a thin position and doing good things. And a lot of the underlying data looks good. So if you have an outfield need, it's worth a shot.
And this is a little sneak peek for the sleeper hitters later on, but he is on that list, Scott. Would you take Max Kepler ahead of Brent Rooker and Brian De La Cruz, two other popular outfield ads right now?
In points leagues, for sure. Categories, I think I just updated my outfield rankings today. I think they're all in the same range. I think Rooker is the highest for me in categories leagues because he has a chance to be a category standout, obviously, in home runs. But we're talking three players who are right around 50th for me in the outfield rankings. Let me see if I have Kepler higher than that in points leagues, because I feel like I probably should, given the advantages of that low strikeout rate in that format. Let me double check that. If this drop down menu would work properly, I could give you an answer quicker. But I keep misclicking, choking under the pressure. Cannot handle a mouse for the life of me. Yeah, I got him too low. I got Kepler too low. I want to move him up. I'm going to move him up.
All right.
I'm going to move him into the top 50 in points leagues.
Look at that.
There you go.
Live on the show, rankings updates, Max Kepler moving on up, doing some interesting things. And it's a small sample size this year, but he's hitting lefties really well. And he hit lefties well last year, too. So the Twins are a team that likes to platoon a lot. I would say, you know, in the top five in baseball in terms of how often they platoon players. So I'm not sure he's going to play every single day, but he probably should, at least based on the past couple of years, splits against lefties.
My player, he's been playing against lefties lately.
Good. Let's get him in there. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah.
My player of the night is for all the wrong reasons. Reed Detmers has really gone the opposite way recently. He got rocked by the Royals. He allowed 6 runs over 5 innings. He allowed 2 home runs in this outing. Still had 14 swinging strikes on 90 pitches. And oddly enough, he only allowed 4 hard hits. The average exit velocity against was actually really good. But it doesn't really matter when, you know, the hard contact you do allow goes over the fence, right? So Reed Detmers, last 4 starts, an 874 ERA, a 159 whip. He's a tough one to figure out, Scott. I feel like, you know, we kind of got duped again by what he was doing early on in the season. But when I look at the individual pitch data, I still think there's a lot to like here with Reed Detmers. There's no way you could start him right now. I understand that. The next question becomes, do you drop Reed Detmers? He's 86% rostered still. Are you okay dropping Reed Detmers following 4 rough outings in a row?
Well, it's not an easy question to answer, even though it sounds like it should be. It's really hard in baseball to resist the idea that what we're seeing lately is what's always going to be. But we know that for Reed Detmers just within this season. His first 4 starts were amazing. He pitched to a 115 ERA or something like that. And then his last 4 starts have been horrible. So we have a microcosm of that just within this season for this particular pitcher. Maybe his next 4 starts will be amazing. I think he's skilled enough to do that. He certainly misses enough bats. Lately, it seems like the biggest problem has been home runs, but it's not like his home run rate this year is out of character. So do I think he's going to finish with the 4.96 ERA he's up to? No, I think it's going to get better, and that means there are going to be some good starts moving ahead. The reason why I'm not going to say absolutely not to drafting Reed Detmers is because, as we've been talking about in recent weeks, there are a lot of interesting pitchers, and it's hard to roster them all. And in shallower leagues, that's especially true. I would still consider Reed Detmers a top 60 pitcher for me. So I think somebody in your league should probably be rostering him. But if it comes down to do I drop Reed Detmers or do I drop Reed Detmers or do I drop, I don't know, Garrett Crochet to use a name that we use all the time. I lean toward dropping Detmers over Crochet now, if you're somebody who finds yourself in that situation.
Mm-hmm. I've got 4 names on the most added pitchers list right now on CBS. Christian Scott. Would you drop Reed Detmers for Scott?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to do that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you do it for any of these 3? Reese Olson, Sandoval, Chris Paddock?
No.
Okay. So, I agree. I lowered him down a little bit today after this rough outing. I think he's still inside of my top 60 starting pitchers, like you mentioned, for all the reasons that you mentioned. The swinging strike rate is still there, but I get it. I mean, people are kind of fed up with, you know, we've seen this happen many times before with Reed Detmers. Again, I still think there's a talented pitcher there, but it certainly is not working out right now for Reed Detmers. Let's get into another prospect spotlight. Time to discuss some of the prospects who are catching our eye from a fantasy perspective thanks to our sponsors at Hyundai, where they're thinking about every step of your journey out on the road. Well, it was only a matter of time, Scott, before we went back to the Baltimore Orioles, and we mentioned this name here and there this season, but we have not done a prospect spotlight on him yet. That is Coby Mayo, third baseman in the Orioles organization. He's 22 years old, fourth round pick back in 2020. He is having a monster season at AAA, where he's batting .295 with 11 home runs, 32 RBI, 3 steals, a .969 OPS, and the quality of contact certainly backs up that he is a legitimate power hitter. 93.6 average exit velocity, 114.9 max exit velocity. The biggest issue here is a 28.7% strikeout rate, though the swinging strike rate is just 11.6%. So I wonder if maybe the strikeout rate is a little bit too elevated. I don't know if this is the first year that they're using the ABS system in AAA, but they definitely do have it down there. And I've read and heard some things that might be causing some higher strikeout rates than it should. So thought I would mention that. But Scott, what are your thoughts on Coby Mayo? Is there a chance that he beats Jackson Holliday back to the Baltimore Orioles?
Well, first of all, Coby Mayo sounds like a particular kind of mayo, doesn't it? Like, if I made this burger with Coby beef and now I'm going to put on Coby Mayo.
Are you a big mayo guy, Scott? Not at all.
In fact,
I agree with you completely. We are in lockstep. I don't eat mayo ever.
One of the things I was most known for in high school is we got a writing prompt in my junior year English class. It's AP English class, and a writing prompt was, if you could ban anything from the world, what would it be? And I wrote about mayonnaise, and my teacher loved it and had me share it. And it kind of propelled me to a writing career, to be honest, because that was the first time I got attention for anything I wrote.
Do you still have that? Do you still have that article or essay?
It might be in my files somewhere.
We've got to find that and publish it to the world.
Oh, I'm sure the quality of the writing I'd find it embarrassing now, but you know, it was like the first time I put my heart into something I wrote instead of just, you know, kind of going through the motions. Anyway, Coby Mayo, back to the player. Nobody wants to hear about my high school writings. Okay. Tons of power. Transcendent power here. And he really took a step forward as a prospect last year. Like, he really broke through. The power was evident from the beginning. Big 6'5" guy. Seemed like he was going to project as a power hitter, but he broke through last year because the plate discipline was so improved. Not just in terms of the strikeouts, but the walk rate was, he walked just in his time at AAA, 16% of the time. So that's been almost cut in half this year, in addition to the strikeout rate going back up. You know, I don't know if it has anything to do with the ABS system, but it's not helping Coby Mayo get to the majors sooner. Last time we talked about him on this podcast, I said, okay, it looks like the strikeouts are correcting. I think it was down to 26% at that point, but since then he's just struck out a ton again. Now, when you hit the ball as hard as Coby Mayo does, you can strike out that much and still be good. But the Orioles are obviously not going to want to rush him, and I think he's kind of giving them an excuse to keep him down right now. They do have an infield opening, Jorge Mateo and Ramon Arias. They're not providing anything worthwhile. Obviously, Orioles, first place team. They would like to get an actual hitter there. They tried it with Jackson Holliday. It didn't work out. It really becomes a question of who's going to fill that opening first between Jackson Holliday and Coby Mayo. And I think it's whoever whoever begins dismantling AAA in a way that can't be ignored, that's who's going to be the one to come up first and claim that open infield spot. And it may be that Mayo beats Holiday back, but maybe not. I think we're going to have to keep an eye on how things progress with his strikeout rate, because we know he's better than this.
Do you worry about Kobe Mayo's power playing in Camden Yards because of the big cutout in left field? He is a right-handed batter. Or does the fact that he hits the ball as hard as he does, he's just going to blast home runs and it doesn't really matter where he plays?
I mean, mostly the second answer. He's going to lose some home runs playing in Baltimore, but will he hit so many anyway that we won't even really think about it or wonder about it or be curious about it at all? I suspect that's the case. Yeah, I expressed those concerns when Jordan Westberg was coming up about his home run potential being stifled by Camden Yards, and he's having a breakout year in spite of it. And I think Kobe Mayo's raw power is significantly higher than Westberg's, which I know Westberg's has turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah.
But Mayo is next level as far as that goes.
All right. Kobe Mayo was one of Scott's five prospects on the verge of getting called up. Make sure to check out the latest prospect report, which is live on the site, cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball.
Thanks again to Hyundai for sponsoring this segment and the show. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Quick reminder to download and follow FBT in 5. That's our 5-minute podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And we have a bonus prospect episode coming out every Saturday of the season. Who knows? Maybe we'll even mention Kobe Mayo again there. Let's take our first break. When we return, the news and notes right after this.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History. We're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He's suffocating people with the pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable. They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back in the news and notes. Luis Robert has resumed hitting, and manager Pedro Grifol said Robert has gotten past a slight setback and isn't far off from starting a minor league rehab assignment. Nolan Jones did light throwing prior to Thursday's game and will continue to ramp up activity on Friday and Saturday. Jackson Chourio has now sat out back-to-back games, both against right-handed pitching. He's batting .221 with a .610 OPS, a 29% strikeout rate. He's actually been much better against righties than he has against lefties so far this season. Scott, are you starting to get concerned about playing time here with Jackson Chourio?
I'm concerned about a lot of things with Jackson Chourio, to be honest. The playing time will take care of itself if he's performing. He has not performed, and as I've mentioned every time we've brought him up this year, it's the contact quality that's most concerning for me, because usually when prospects are hyped like he was from the time he was 17, 18 years old and sped through the minor league system, got a big contract on the opening day roster at age 20, you kind of take the contact quality for granted. There may not be enough contact. He may swing in at too many pitches he shouldn't swing at, but you may not have a high average exit velocity just because you're swinging at too many bad balls and getting too much weak contact. But the max exit velocity is 108.6, which I've seen worse, but yeah, for this transcendent talent like Jackson Chourio is supposed to be, that's discouraging. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's like an indictment on the rest of his career. He is only 20 after all, but I am not feeling good about him being a fantasy asset this year. Having said that, I think he's still in my top 40 outfielders just because that's the state of the outfield right now. And I think Chory is going to keep getting chances.
Yeah.
But I can't say I have a ton of confidence in him at this point.
As bad as the batting average has been, the strikeouts, the OPS, obviously, 4 home runs and 6 steals, you know, in the first, I don't know, 5-6 weeks of the season, he's on pace to go over 2020 as a rookie, but maybe he's going to do it in like an Anthony Volpe way where, you know, the batting average really sinks you, but he is providing power and speed along the way. Tommy Edman remains limited to tee work. He has been cleared to up the intensity of his workouts, but Edman's progress remains slow with no return date in sight. He was placed on the 60-day IL earlier this week. Wilson Contreras underwent successful surgery to repair a fractured left forearm and is likely to be sidelined 10 weeks. The timeline earlier in the week was 6 to 8 weeks. So somehow it's gone up, and that means we won't get Wilson Contreras back until about late July. I started doing some preliminary waiver work for this weekend. My second catcher now in so many leagues is going to be so bad without Wilson Contreras. It is disheartening to say the least. Luis Renjifo was placed in the IL with an illness retroactive to May 6th. Kyron Paris was recalled by the Angels. Brandon Drury was also placed in the IL with tightness in his hamstring. Christian Javier will return Saturday against the Tigers. He missed nearly a month with a neck problem. Eduardo Rodriguez is close to beginning a throwing program after an MRI on Wednesday showed healing in his left shoulder. Brian Wu is expected to be activated to start Friday against the A's. He's up to 77% rostered. Should that be closer to 100%, Brian Wu?
I moved him up to 65th. So
would you drop Reed Detmers to add Brian Wu?
I probably wouldn't, but they're not going to be far apart once I move down Reed Detmers. And Wu obviously has the upside to climb from there, but you know, he's coming back from injury. He doesn't have much of a track record at the major league level. I do think there's a lot of swing and miss potential. He throws a lot of strikes for somebody who has his swing and miss potential. There's a lot to like here with Brian Wu, but how much will the Mariners coddle him? You know, a lot of his starts last year were on the shorter side, and I kind of suspect that's going to be true again this year, certainly early on. But Wu has upside for sure.
The Brewers are promoting one of their pitching prospects, Robert Gasser. Can't really get a much better name for that as a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. To make his debut on Friday against the Cardinals, the Brewers were forced into a 6-man rotation because of Freddie Peralta's suspension. Gasser could be sent down after the start. I guess it obviously depends how he looks in the start. He's 24 years old, solid minor league career, 3.79 ERA, 1.28 whip, well over a strikeout per inning. Scott, any interest in Robert Gasser in deeper leagues?
I mean, since it's probably going to be a short stay, I'm not that excited about him. The irony to him being named Gasser is that he doesn't actually throw that hard. he's more of a, what would be the best way to describe it? I don't know. His strikeout rates are good for not throwing particularly hard. And he has like a 14% swinging strike rate in his brief time, his 3 starts at AAA this year. But the control is suspect, and just he's kind of an unconventional pitching prospect. He's been a difficult one for me to size up. I think it'll help to get a little sneak peek at him here, but I don't expect him to stick around for long this time.
According to MLB Pipeline, Robert Gasser, left-handed pitcher, throws 91 to 94-ish, really good slider, and looks like a pretty solid cutter as well. But we'll see how he fares in his debut on Friday. The Pirates recalled Nick Gonzalez from AAA, 30 games there this year. He was batting .358 with 4 home runs, a .1039 OPS, just a 17.5% strikeout rate. Strikeouts have been a big problem for Nick Gonzalez in the minors. 90.9 mile per hour average exit velocity. He's still only 24 years old, 7th overall pick back in 2020. I'm not saying it's going to work out, Scott, but if it was going to work out, lowering the strikeout rate and hitting the ball a lot harder seems like a way that it would.
Yeah, and I have heard talk of some adjustments he's made because he obviously hadn't lived up to the potential, the hype he got when the Pirates originally drafted him, and strikeouts were a big reason for it. So it does seem like Nick Gonzalez has kind of reinvented himself here and maybe could end up being good after all, but reasonable to approach him with skepticism right now.
Guardians prospect Chase DeLauder was diagnosed with a broken foot on Sunday, but won't require surgery. He remains without a timetable, had a huge spring, but it sounds like we won't be seeing Chase DeLauder anytime soon with the Guardians. Sound the alarms, regression alert for two pitchers here on Thursday. Sonny Gray got knocked around at the Brewers. He allowed 6 runs over 5 innings, including 3 home runs in the start. He gave up 10 hard hits in this one, and the truth is he really just got hit hard. I didn't really see anything concerning under the hood when I looked at this start. He also just faced the Brewers a couple of weeks ago, so they saw him recently. That is Sonny Gray. And Logan Gilbert got smacked around at the Minnesota Twins, who are red hot. I think they won something like 15 of their past 17 games, and their offense has really come alive. 4 innings, 8 runs allowed. Still had 18 swinging strikes on 91 pitches here for Logan Gilbert. Looks like he did not have the fastball or the cutter working at all. He also got BABIPed, 533 BABIP in this start against Logan Gilbert. Entered this one with a 169 ERA, so obviously that was not going to remain. It's just unfortunate It all came in one start here, Scott. Anything actually concerning about Gilbert or Sonny Gray here?
No, I think it's pure regression for both. Sonny Gray's ERA was even more ridiculous. I believe it was 0.89. And yeah, obviously those aren't going to last. For as ugly as these starts were, both pitchers still have a great ERA on the year, better than we usually see from them. If these crooked stat lines revealed something scary, like reduced velocity, I might be more concerned, but that wasn't the case. I think Sonny Gray just happened to give up 3 home runs. I think Logan Gilbert, as you pointed out, he had some bad batted ball luck here. And, you know, everything regresses to the mean. Like I've been saying, it's going to happen for pitchers who seemed like they couldn't miss up to this point.
Who did all that damage against Logan Gilbert? The Twins scored 11 runs total on 11 hits, including 2 home runs. Ryan Jeffers went 1-for-2 with a walk and his 8th home run. He is on fire. As we mentioned yesterday, Scott and I both moved Ryan Jeffers inside of our top 10 catchers rest of season. We spoke about Max Kepler, who went 2-for-4 with his 3rd home run. A name we have not mentioned, Jose Miranda, went 2-for-4 with a double, 3 runs scored. He's batting .293. He's got 2 homers, an .805 OPS, has started 6 of the past 7 games for the Twins. And you remember last year coming into the season, there was some hype around Jose Miranda. The ADP was right around 150. He's getting a chance now, Scott. In deeper leagues, anything to see here with Jose Miranda?
I mean, I have him in an AL-only league, and it's an AL-only roto league, so big lineup. I've been starting him. That's what you have to do in an AL-only league. I've been pleased with what I've gotten from him. It's more than I expected. Of course, last year was derailed by a shoulder impingement that eventually required surgery. I don't remember the whole history of that, if it had some impact on his disappointing production. It's reasonable to think it did, but I don't remember the exact timeline there. I will say, though, the exit velocity data looks worse for Miranda this year than it did last year.
It's bad.
And the strikeout rate, it was exactly 15.8 both years. Maybe a little lower than that this year, but basically the exact same, very good strikeout rate, but not any different. I don't see a lot of change here under the hood for Miranda, even though the results have been much better. And it's a difficult fit for him in this Twins lineup. He's not a great defensive third baseman. They'd kind of been transitioning him to first base. Third base is the way to get him in the lineup now, but Royce Lewis is going to be back sooner than later. And I think that's going to leave with Jose Miranda without a spot to play. I don't think it's far-fetched to say his numbers will have regressed to a point that the Twins won't mind losing him when that happens.
Any concern regarding Hunter Green, who struggled with control against the D-backs here? 5 innings, 3 runs, 5 walks, 6 strikeouts, still had 18 swinging strikes on 84 pitches. His fastball velocity was down 2.6 miles per hour. He averaged 95.4. The usual is 98 for Hunter Green. And here was a quote that I saw from him after this start. Quote, "It was a sluggish day from when I got to the field. I was just grinding from the first pitch, trying to make the most of it and still go out there and compete and give the team a chance. It was an early start time too, so maybe that's part of it, but Scott, any lasting concern here about Hunter Green's velo being down?
You don't like to see it. He says he was feeling sluggish, as you point out. So I don't know exactly what that means. Like, he was feeling sluggish, like his shoulder didn't have its usual strength, or he was just feeling tired. I don't know exactly what he means by sluggish. You don't hear too often about pitchers' velocity dropping like this just because they're tired or whatever. But, you know, it's not going to be a concern, I think, unless next start we see the same thing from Hunter Green. So I wouldn't panic yet. He's been pretty good so far. I don't think we should expect him to turn into an ace this year. But yeah, I think we'll just have to keep an eye on this velocity situation. I presume right now it's just an aberration. We'll see.
Let's slide into the waiver wire, and we'll first talk about hitters. Michael Conforto could be available in some shallower leagues. He is up to 77% rostered. He's quietly been really solid, 2 for 3 with a walk and his 7th home run. He's homered in back-to-back games. He's batting 275 with an 822 OPS. He's hitting lefties well. The expected stats look pretty good for Conforto, 263 XBA, 487 X-Slug. Scott, would you have Conforto ahead of the names we mentioned earlier, the Max Keplers and Brent Rookers of the world?
No, I prefer Kepler and Rooker to Conforto. I've not had a lot of confidence in Conforto. He hit those 4 home runs right away and then did nothing, and now he's kind of having a second power binge here. I did notice his fly ball rate is up. It's closing in on 45%, which is high. It's higher than we're used to seeing from him. His home run to fly ball rate is normal. It's what it's been the previous couple of years. It was higher like in 2019 when we thought of Michael Conforto as this 30 homer guy because home runs were so easy to come by. But in recent years, his home run to fly ball rate this year looks like it has then. So I guess if he can sustain the higher fly ball rate, maybe he can continue to exceed expectations like this, but I would bet on that normalizing rather than becoming just the new normal for Conforto right now. So hot hand play at a weak position, I get it. I'd consider him a sell high candidate though, and leagues deep enough that you could even consider that you could find a buyer for him.
Okay. Jamer Candelario is slowly coming around. He went 2 for 4 with his 4th home run, and over his last 8 games, he's batting 379 with 2 homers, hitting the ball really hard, tons of line drives during that time. Candelario is 66% rostered. If he was dropped, would you be looking to re-add Candelario? Somebody I think we universally liked as a sleeper this season.
Yeah, so I actually hadn't noticed that he was beginning to pick things up at the plate. I guess it's not terribly surprising. Everything regresses to the mean, right? He's not a young guy, and I was most concerned about how inflated his strikeout rate was. It was insanely high. And let's see, has it gotten much better? It was in the mid-30s before. Now it is down to, for Jamer Candelario, it's down in the low 30s, so it's getting better. Yeah, we did like him as a sleeper coming in. It seems like a career high in home runs is to be expected given the park he's playing in now in Cincinnati. And his playing times should be pretty secure with Noel V. Marte still out and Christian Encarnacion Strand down now for 6 weeks. So I don't know. In corner infield leagues, obviously, but considering Candelaria is already 49% owned, maybe he never got dropped in those leagues.
He's 66%, actually.
Yeah. Okay. So even more likely, I was looking at the wrong player there. Mm-hmm. Would I? So I'm trying to remember, who were we talking about yesterday as a first base? Like, we were talking, can you drop Spencer Torkelson? And we were like, no, I'm not going to drop Torkelson for Candelario.
I agree.
Can you drop, who was another struggling one? Michael Bush
Yandy for Candelario. Diaz, Yandy Diaz.
I'm not going to drop Yandy Diaz.
Michael Bush, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could, in the sort of league where you could even consider dropping Michael Bush, because it's shallow enough, I could see swapping him out for the hotter hand. But I don't know that in the long run you're gaining much there.
Okay. Don't drop Joey Loperfido just yet. If you picked him up in 5 outfielder leagues, he had his best game yet. We went 2-for-3 with a walk and his first career steal. He's 6-for-19 so far with 2 RBI. Did not start the previous 2 games. Both were against righties, so didn't love that. But having a strong game here, hopefully that builds some confidence both on him and his manager to continue playing Joey Loperfido.
Yeah, it is just one game. Yeah. And I believe only one of his batted balls had a high expected batting average. So one of those singles was pretty weak. I don't know. The Astros have the most favorable hitter matchups, and it's 5 righties versus 2 lefties. So I considered Joey Loperfido for the top 10 sleeper hitters next week. I just don't feel like I've seen enough to want to get him in my lineup, even in a sleeper context like that, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe a big weekend will change my mind, but there hasn't been enough yet.
How would you rank these 3 outfielders? Probably for 5 outfielder leagues. Brenton Doyle had a bounce back game, went 2-for-4 with his 4th home run. His previous 10 games before this, he was batting 128 with a 33% strikeout rate. Jock Peterson continues to hit. He went 3-for-5 with a sock and a shoe. And Tommy Pham continues to hit as well. He's off to a great start. 2-for-4 with a double, a run, and an RBI. He's batting 313 with 2 homers and an 840 OPS. Scott, how do you rank Pham, Jock, and Doyle?
I rank them differently depending on the format we're talking about. I think Pham would be number 1 in a points league. Doyle would be number 1 in a categories league. Obviously, the difference there is strikeouts. Peterson would be 2nd, regardless of format. And I think he could be a pretty handy player if it's like a daily league, or if you're just very dedicated to playing matchups in weekly leagues. If there are enough righties on the schedule, I think Jock Peterson could come in handy. Shallow leagues probably have no use for him.
Mm-hmm. I just checked his roster rate. Jock Peterson on Yahoo, it's 5%, but those are typically 12-team leagues with only 3 outfield spots, but a lot of them are daily. I agree. I think that's probably Jock Peterson's best format, but I'm not sure he's enough of a difference maker in a league that shallow to roster him. So just
right.
Thought I would check. 2 names in deeper leagues. John Singleton hit a mammoth home run. When I say I watch a lot of Yankee games, you don't see home runs land where John Singleton hit this home run. It was a huge shot. It was 115.4 exit velocity, 442 feet, and he has started all 9 games since Jose Abreu was sent down, and he's batting 241 with 4 homers and a 90.5 average exit velocity during that time. A gentleman named Dairon Blanco with the Royals had a huge game, went 3-for-3 with a sock and 2 shoes. He's a part-time player, pinch runner type. He has 10 steals on the season. The problem for him, he's only started 2 of the past 10 games. Anything to add here, Scott? John Singleton and Dairon Blanco.
Hard to have anything to say about Blanco because he starts like once a week.
Yeah.
So good on him having a big game. He's 31 years old too, so he's clearly not a big part of the Royals' future or anything. He's just a role player who played his role as well as he possibly could today. But John Singleton, on the other hand, still liking this guy.
Me too.
I'm liking this guy. I mean, the Astros obviously like this guy because they've made him their everyday first baseman. And certainly the contact quality is there. That home run he hit, 115.4 miles per hour, that's his hardest hit ball. he had already hit one 114. So he was already setting new highs and reaching elite levels in terms of peak exit velocity. And that's to go along with great plate discipline. I'm not sure why his expected stats are so low on StatCast, but I think the tools are there for him to potentially take off. I'm not saying like you got to add Singleton in the shallow leagues. I wouldn't add him over Jamer Candelario, but I do have him as one of the top 10 sleeper hitters for this week. He is the representative for the Astros with them having the best hitter matchups.
All right, let's talk about one waiver wire pitcher. And Scott, don't lower Eric Fetty in those rankings just yet. Don't do it. Because when you do it, he goes out, has a pretty good start against the Guardians. 6 shutout innings, 6 hits, 0 walks, 3 strikeouts, only 7 swinging strikes on 88 pitches. And it kind of just feels like Fetty is tinkering from start to start. I'm trying to find consistency among the pitch mix and what he's doing in the games that he's successful and the ones that he's not. And I can't find much, but he's now allowed 2 earned runs or fewer in 6 of 8 starts. He's got a 3 ERA on the nose, a 1.16 whip, right around a strikeout per inning, getting a good amount of ground balls. I think he's just solid, and he's 62% rostered. He's home against the Nationals next week.
Yeah.
Do you regret it, Scott? Do you regret it?
Here's the problem. Is solid good enough when you're pitching for the White Sox? I don't think it is, and that's why I don't really regret it. We can't roster all the pitchers in the world, and I don't think Eric Fetty is high impact enough to overcome the supporting cast issue. I don't think he's going to be consistent enough. The one thing his good starts have had in common is 0 walks. So 3 of his last 4 starts, 0 walks. The other one, he walked 5. And the 0 walk starts were all great. But in this one, he had only 7 whiffs, as you point out. 5 came on the cutter, 1 each on the splitter and sweeper, which are supposed to be his best pitches. Those were supposed to be the pitches that allowed him to take off in South Korea last year. And they just look so blah, you know? He's obviously not going to have pristine control all the time. I'm not sure it's always going to be to his benefit when he does, since he doesn't have a lot of whiff potential there. And it's not like his ground ball rate is through the roof. I don't know. I think the distribution of his starts is going to end up looking sort of like Dean Kramer, but Dean Kramer's got a great offense backing him up and Fetty has a terrible one. So how excited are we about Dean Kramer? I do have Fetty ranked ahead of Dean Kramer, but so I don't know. I'm kind of presenting a bit of a downside case there, I guess. Ultimately, though, I just don't think the impact potential is going to be very high. He's around 75th in my starting pitcher rankings.
And I think I have him in a very similar spot. So, yeah, I think that's fine. I wouldn't drop Reed Detmers for him. And I think I would take...
Not at all.
Yeah, I would take Christian Scott ahead of him. I have Fetty one spot ahead of Sandoval. That one's a lot closer. Like, Sandoval has more strikeout upside, but probably has a lower floor too. So, all right, let's take our final break. When we return, we will get into our week 8 preview. We'll do that right after this.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Welcome back in. Let's get into our week 8 preview, and we will start things off with the schedule. 20 teams have 6 games next week. 10 teams have 7 games, including the Rays, Pirates, Phillies, A's, Mets, Dodgers, Astros, Reds, Cubs, and Red Sox. What about the Rockies for next week? They have 6 games, and all of them are on the road. Starters sit these fringy 2-star pitchers. The aforementioned Hunter Green, velocity was down. He's at the D-backs and at the Dodgers next week.
Yeah, I have him as a probable start. You're probably going to want to start him.
Tanner Bibee has struggled a lot recently. He is going up against the Rangers and the Twins. As I mentioned, the Twins are red hot, and Tanner Bibee is not.
Yeah, I'd still probably start him.
Nick Pivetta threw only 58 pitches in his return. He's going up against the Rays and at the Cardinals.
Yeah, good matchups. Obviously, he didn't get good results in his first start back. It was against the Braves. Mostly Marcell Ozuna is the one who got to him. But those are two really good matchups for Pivetta.
Okay. Jordan Hicks is home against the Dodgers, but also gets the Rockies on the road in San Francisco.
Feel pretty good about starting him as well. None of them I would consider must starts, but probable starts. Do you disagree on any of them, Frank? Hunter Green, Tanner Bibee, Nick Pivetta, Jordan Hicks.
Tanner Bibee, just as someone who has him in multiple leagues, it's been a mess right now, and I don't like those matchups. I think if you play in a shallower categories league and you have some options on the bench, I know we usually say, oh, if you can't start a pitcher in a 2-star week, should you have this player on your team? Tanner Bibee has enough upside. I think we know that. But if you can get away from him in a categories league, the way the ratios have been recently, I wouldn't mind doing that. In a points league, I think I'm fine using Tanner Bibee. Yeah, sure. Pivetta in a points league as a SPARP. Another one where in categories, I might kind of play it safe with Pivetta. Jordan Hicks, I feel good starting. I think I'm all right with that one. The last two names on this list, Sean Manaea is up against the Phillies and at the Marlins.
I lean no on that. I could see doing it as a SPARP at a points league, but I lean no. He hasn't had a good start, like a really good start in a while.
Kenta Maeda just got rocked, but he is facing the Marlins and at the D-backs next week. The D-backs are good, but not as good against right-handed pitching. What do you think about Maeda?
I'm going to pass.
I think that is the prudent move here with Kenta Maeda. What about the 2-star pitchers to add and stream? These names are rostered in less than 80% of CBS leagues. Who you got?
So these are pretty much all just points league recommendations. If you want to chase counting stats in a categories league, I'm not going to tell you you can't. But mostly I'd just be looking to start all these guys in points leagues, with one exception. Christopher Sanchez. I think you start him everywhere at the Mets against the Nationals. He barely makes the cutoff here. He's 79% rostered. But after him, the points league guys, Gavin Stone at San Francisco versus Cincinnati. The strikeouts have been underwhelming, especially lately, but the matchups are good enough. And he's got the Dodgers offense backing him, obviously. Aaron Civale has been pretty shaky. I think he'll rebound. I'm not confident it's going to be right now, but with the 2-star week and a points league, looking to maximize volume, probably end up starting him at Boston, at Toronto. Those are decent matchups. Chris Paddock, coming off a really good 4-start stretch versus the Yankees at the Guardians. So the matchups could be better, but he's got two of them. Jose Budo versus the Phillies at the Marlins. One bad matchup, one good matchup. Hopefully you get a win out of that. Graham Ashcraft at the Diamondbacks at the Dodgers. Not the greatest matchups, but he's been steady enough to, I think, earn points league consideration anytime he's making 2 starts. That's Graham Ashcraft. And if you want a really highly available option, Jose Soriano will go to that well again. His first matchup is great against the Cardinals. Second matchup at the Rangers, not so great. The stuff still looks tremendous. He's just struggling. He's kind of doing the Edward Cabrera thing, is Jose Soriano, but doesn't have such a long history of it that we need to be as dismissive of him. And again, only 13% rostered is Jose Soriano.
If you miss out on the 2-star pitchers, who are some single start streamers for next week?
Not a lot. Not a lot of good ones here. I think we've kind of entered a rut with the both the pitchers and hitters for this segment. They're like, everybody's kind of picked through everything already, and what's left is generally not that appetizing. But three decent ones this week, at least. John Means against the Mariners. I think that's pretty attractive. I'd start him all over all those two start guys again, except for Christopher Sanchez. That's John Means. Reese Olson gets the Marlins. He doesn't have a win yet, but he's a winner in my book. And Eric Fetty, he gets the Nationals.
Yeah, I kind of like that group of the single start streamers. So yeah, I don't really mind them. I was about to say that I would start all three over Tanner Bibee next week, but that's probably a little bit too reckless. So I will retract my thought there. What about the hitters for next week? The best matchups include the Astros, the Angels, the Pirates, the Phillies, and the Tigers. And the worst hitter matchups, Orioles, Blue Jays, Nationals, Rays, and the A's. Who are the sleeper hitters for week 8?
I do want to say I came up with five good hitter matchups, five teams with good hitter matchups, because that's what's required of me. But it was a stretch to get there. There are only with all the pitchers who are pitching well right now. It was a stretch to get to five. I feel like only the first four of those teams really have hitter matchups that are that good. And so that really limited my selection of sleeper hitters here, because there weren't a lot of matchup related choices. So a lot of them are just hot hand plays, which I don't really prefer from a process standpoint. I feel like when I lean on a guy just because he's hot heading into the weekend, you know, him sustaining that hotness throughout the following week doesn't always work out. But anyway, that's why Max Kepler's at the top of the list, because obviously he's hot, as we already talked about. Brent Rooker, he's hot. I actually have the Athletics as the fifth worst hitter matchup, and yet here I am recommending Brent Rooker, which shows you how limited my choices were, because I also hate to ever choose sleeper hitters who are on teams with bad matchups. Brian De La Cruz, the Marlins matchups are on the better end for a week where not many teams have good hitter matchups. And De La Cruz has been hot, of course. Mark Canna, the Tigers had the fifth best hitter matchups, to whatever degree that means anything. Three of the pitchers on tap are lefties, and Canna certainly this year has been mashing lefties. John Singleton, who I mentioned with Astros having the best hitter matchups and only two lefties in their seven games, think he's a fine play. Might roll the dice on Joe Adell, with the Angels having the second best matchups. Might roll the dice on Spencer Torkelson. You know, worked out Anthony Rizzo. I predicted the week he'd come back to life. Torkelson's been getting some hits here and there lately. And the Tigers, you know, fifth best hitter matchup. So maybe this is the week. But boy, I'm reaching here, clearly. Willie Castro, you know, he's been performing well lately. The Twins matchups aren't so bad. Brandon Marsh, Phillies have the fourth best hitter matchups. Four righties on the schedule. I don't know if that's reason enough to start Marsh. I'm rounding out the list here with Kyle Manzardo, who has one major league hit so far. But no lefties on the schedule for the Guardians, so I think that would benefit Manzardo. Do I really want to start him? No, I really don't. But you may be desperate enough to try.
All right, well, I had this trade matchmaker I wanted to do. I'm sitting here thinking, what did we talk about for an hour, Scott? Like, there's
we
no
talked
time
about
left.
My paper on mayonnaise in the 11th grade. That was it.
I was just thinking, yeah, maybe we spoke about mayonnaise for too long, but here we are.
I was just long-winded, probably. No, you give me a space of time to fill, and I will fill it, baby.
That is your job, yeah. Per se. I'll just quickly mention the names, and if we get a short slate coming up soon, we can dive into this a little bit more. But the six buy-low hitters I was going to present were Matt Olson, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Manny Machado, Brian Reynolds, Alex Bregman, and Vinny Pasquantino, who had a big game on Thursday. He went 2-for-5. With his fifth home run, it was a blast. 110.6 exit velocity, 442 feet. With the exception of Bregman, all of those names I just mentioned, their expected stats are much better than their actual numbers so far this season. And the thought on Bregman is that he just gets off to these slow starts. He got off to a slow start last year as well. Bregman's first 38 games last season. This went through May 12th, so basically where we are right now. He hit .201 with four homers and a .650 OPS. He still finished hitting .262, 25 home runs, and an .804 OPS. He's also in a contract year, so yes, I was going to bring up Bregman and the rest of those names. And I had a bunch of potential sell-high candidates. It might have been a good segment. I don't know. We'll break it out someday soon. Want to wrap up with some other leftovers. Mention some hitters that are going in opposite directions right now, Scott. Two names that are slowing down that I hadn't really realized, but Lourdes Gurriel, his first 23 games, he hit .300 with a .852 OPS. His last 11 games, he's batting .087 with one extra base hit, not hitting the ball hard at all during that span. And Spencer Steer, his first 20 games, hit .324, three homers, four steals. His last 17 games, batting .133, but he's still running. He has six steals during that time, and it looks like he's just hitting way too many fly balls. Any actual concern with either Steer or Lourdes Gurriel?
Not really for Steer. He has a great park to hit in, obviously the best. The kind of park that's going to make his not so stellar power is going to make it stand up. And he steals plenty of bases. It's a diverse skill set, obviously plenty of job security. In terms of like how many points he scored, it's still really high for the season, even though he's slumped recently. If you go rank in a points league, at least sortable stats at first base, third base, Steer is going to be very high up there. So I wouldn't sweat it so much with him. Lourdes Gurriel, though, he was one of those players I wrote about earlier this week, 24, who it would be okay to drop in shallower leagues. I was kind of floored to see Lourdes Gurriel. Well, now he's rostered in 96% of leagues. And I just don't think he deserves that. That feels like a guy who had a really strong first week. And it kind of stuck with him in terms of people's perception when he's done basically nothing since then. And he's been around long enough that we know who he is. He might hit .260 with 25 homers and with you know, low on base percentage, which is good enough that he probably needs to be started in all five outfielder leagues. But in three outfielder points leagues, pretty fringy. If you want to dump Lourdes Gurriel for the hot hand there, I think that's totally fine.
All right, and then three hitters who are picking things up. Aaron Judge looks like he's back. 1-for-4 with his 9th home run. It was a blast. 115.7 exit velocity, 473 feet for Aaron Judge. Over his last 12 games, he's batting .372 with 5 home runs, 12 RBI, 98.3 average exit velocity. Tyro Estrada is picking things up. He went 2-for-3 with a walk. And over his last 16 games, he's batting .293 with 2 home runs, 10 RBI, and 1 steal. I would like to see Estrada run more. He's still 75th percentile in sprint speed. I wonder if this is maybe a Bob Melvin thing, because the Giants are currently 29th in stolen bases as a team so far this season. That could impact Tyro Estrada long term. And Michael Garcia, who continues to pick things back up, 3-for-5 with 2 doubles, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Over his last 19 games, he is batting .329 with 1 homer, 7 doubles, 12 runs, 12 RBI, and 4 steals. So it was a hot start for Michael Garcia, cold middle, and then he is very hot once again. Anything else to add on Garcia, Estrada, and Aaron Judge?
I think you basically summed it up. If I could add a comment on Alex Bregman, who you want... from the segment that never was pretty much everybody you mentioned there, I think is going to regress to the mean in a very good way. And I think Alex Bregman, same thing. You mentioned the expected stats didn't look great for him. They never look great for him. He's kind of weird, like his teammate Jose Altuve in that way, but the strikeout rate is normal, which is to say very low. The max exit velocity is normal. I don't see a diminishment in skill there for Alex Bregman, which means he's probably going to be fine. But I wanted to mention that there was that curious story from this spring about how he spent a lot of time swinging weighted bats this offseason and had improved his the velocity on his swing by like 4 miles per hour. And he was trying to get back to being the 40 homer guy he was in 2019. Somebody needs to tell Alex Bregman it's not 2019 anymore. And I just wonder if that might be contributing to the slow start, because he did kind of do like he kind of meddled with his mechanics there, you know, given his history, given that all that data still looks normal for him. It's probably not a big deal, but it is in the back of my mind, and I thought it was worth bringing up.
All right, some leftovers we will quickly run through. Pablo Lopez pitched a gem against the Mariners, 6 1/3 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts, 0 walks. He had 15 swinging strikes on 100 pitches. He has 8-plus strikeouts in 3 straight. Ronel Blanco was solid at the Yankees, 5 2/3 innings, 2 runs allowed, 4 walks to 5 strikeouts, allowed a ton of hard contact in this start. And I know Chris brought him up on Monday's podcast as a sell high. I agree with Ronel Blanco. I mean, he's just walking too many batters for like the amount of strikeouts that he gets. And at some point, those walks are going to hurt Ronel Blanco in a big way. So if you could turn him into, I don't know, a viable starter at an offensive position anywhere, I think I'd be looking to do something like that, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, FIP and XFIP for him are both around 420, even though his ERA is as low as it is. For what it's worth, XERA is much, much lower. So the quality
really
of
good,
contact,
yeah.
Like Ronel Blanco does not give up hits. I mean, he threw a no-hitter, but like he is built not to give up hits. And so maybe he can overcome a 4.1 walk per nine rate better than most pitchers can. But there is some amount of regression coming, I would agree.
Some of the hitting leftovers, Ellie De La Cruz just continues to run. 2 for 3 with a walk and 2 more steals. He is batting .264 with 8 homers, 28 runs, and 23 steals. His 150-game pace, 32 homers, 93 steals for Ellie De La Cruz. Yordan Alvarez needed to get back on track, and he went 2 for 5 with his 8th home run. Previous 14 games entering this game, 154 batting average with 2 homers and way too many fly balls for Yordan Alvarez. Jose Ramirez and Josh Neller, they went back-to-back here on Thursday. Ramirez's 8th homer and Josh Naylor's 10th. Some bullpen updates for the D-backs. Paul Sewald got the 9th with a 1-run lead. He struck out 2 for his first save of the season. For the Astros, Josh Hader got the final 4 outs for his 4th save. And for the White Sox, Michael Kopech got the final 4 outs with just a 1-run lead. He picked up his 4th save of the season as well. To stream or not to stream? And I just realized that I did not write down the matchups beforehand, Scott. So we've got to
go.
We've got to go the old way.
Important detail, Frank.
Yes, for your favorite segment that has ever existed, to stream or not to stream. So I will just run through some names and you tell me if you like them or not. On Friday, we have Javier Assad at the Pirates.
That's probably going to be among the better ones.
Casey Mize at home against the Astros.
Nah.
Clark Schmidt at the Rays.
I'd rather not.
Taj Bradley's season debut against the Yankees.
I like him more than Schmidt, but less than Assad.
Brandon.
I do want to mention, because I wrote about Taj Bradley for Waiver Wire today. Yesterday, I should say. New splitter. He's throwing 20% of the time. He was untouchable at AAA with that and getting a lot more strikeouts than we ever saw him get at that level of the minors. So definitely worth picking up if he's available, but it's scary to start him out against the Yankees straight off the IL.
Brandon Pfaadt at the Orioles?
Nah.
Robert Gasser in his debut against the Cardinals?
No.
Griffin Canning against the Royals?
Nah.
Paul Blackburn at the Mariners?
I mean, if you're really desperate to get another start in there, it sounds like one of the better ones.
Andrew Abbott at the Giants.
That's okay.
Yeah. So it sounds like Abbott, Assad, and was there anyone else that we really liked? Maybe Taj Bradley?
Yeah. I Assad's the only one that I firmly support.
On Saturday, we have Simeon Woods-Richardson in a revenge game at the Blue Jays.
I don't think so. Nah, not a lot of faith in him.
John Means against the D-backs. They are so good against lefties. I don't know.
He's in Camden Yards. I like this better than most of what we're going to talk about as streaming options. So I understand your point about the Diamondbacks beating up on lefties, but Means is the best pitcher I think we've mentioned so far.
Christian Scott is home against the Braves.
Yeah, I'd do that over a lot of these.
Taijuan Walker at the Marlins.
No, I don't think so.
Scrolling through to see if there's anybody else that is interesting on Saturday. Nope, that's in Coors Field. We don't want to do that. Tyler Anderson against the Royals.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably on the same level as Javier Assad.
Okay. And then we get to Sunday, where we have Dean Kramer against the D-backs.
You could do worse, but it's dangerous.
Braxton Garrett in his season debut against the Phillies.
Man, he was killing it on his rehab assignment, but this is the Phillies, so probably not.
Logan Allen at the White Sox.
We've tried this with him a couple times this year, and it hasn't gone well, so I'm leaning no.
No, don't do it. Frankie Montas at the Giants.
Yeah, I like that one. That might be my favorite one of the entire weekend.
Patrick Sandoval home against the Royals.
That might be my second favorite one of the entire weekend.
And I think that's probably it. Maybe Bryce Elder at the Mets, Sunday Night Baseball.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thanks as always for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. And we will be back again next week. Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.